Hey, Pirate Nation, this is former East Carolina pitcher Davey Penny of the Keith LeClair era, class of 2003. Keep it tuned to the Sports Objective as you follow our Diamond Bucks on the road to Omaha, because y'all know, we're going.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate baseball.
Welcome into Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective, brought to you by Next Level Training Center. Very happy to have the owner of Next Level Training Center. We'll get to him in just a second, Trent Britt. I appreciate for him for all the sponsorship this year and support of the show and this very show for talking East Carolina baseball. Hey, ladies and gentlemen, we have Kyle from LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, Dave? Good to be here with you on this Memorial Day Eve, if you will, as we sit here. Within minutes, the anticipation's in the air. You can cut the electricity with a knife. We're going to find out the host sites. Will the Pirates host? We'll find out for sure here in a matter of minutes.
What's up, Bubba Rosenbaum? I appreciate you, buddy. We know you've been working really hard today behind the scenes as we get ready for finding out where the Pirates and everybody else are playing.
Yeah, just finished mowing, but prior to that, I'd had my own whip-around coverage of ESPN Plus with the different college baseball conference tournament championship games going on this afternoon, and then also the super regional game in JMU punching their ticket in softball for Oklahoma City.
Very cool for them, and beat Missouri, right, at the super regional there.
Yeah, and they took down Missouri. I think it was 7-2, and that was yesterday. Missouri had beat them 7-2.
Bubba, do you think there's a market out there for you to have a your own YouTube channel with people watching you watch baseball?
I'm sure some might say that, but I'm certainly not in the market for that. It's not my thing.
Okay. All right. Well, some people actually think that people want to watch them watch games. So I didn't know if you knew that.
Yeah. I think that's to the south of us in South Carolina. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, the owner of Next Level Training Center and sponsor of this show, Trent Britt, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, guys. What a great weekend. I have wife had a little minor knee surgery on Friday, so I've had an excuse to watch every conference tournament game that's been televised and then some on ESPN Plus this weekend. So it's been a lot of baseball and softball for me this weekend, for sure.
No doubt about it. Let's talk about the Pirates. They fell a little bit short, obviously, last night, but certainly the way the tournament started early in the week on Tuesday against Memphis, they had a nice little run, and I don't think we'll find out in a matter of minutes, but Trent, I'm going to put you on the spot first because you're the expert here. I just don't see how in the world that the committee could leave Greenville out of being a host for a regional. Do you?
No, I feel pretty confident, Dave, just following the 20 sites all weekend and taking a look at how it's played out with those 20 schools, I feel very confident we're going to be in there. If I had to guess, I'm going to say a 13 or a 14 would be my guess. When they, you know, we'll be a site and we'll be, I think a 13 or a 14 is a total guess, but it's an educated guess.
Yeah, that's, I was thinking 12. So that, but you obviously, I know if we had won, if we'd won the tournament, we may be somewhere between 8 to 10. But since we didn't make it even to the finals, I was thinking a 12. So when you say a 13, and then I know there's some other folks that Bubba's pointed out to me earlier today that were saying 13. And I think was Bubba was a D1.
Honestly, don't recall right offhand. Yeah, that was one of their projections that had
Baseball America said 15.
Yeah, Baseball America, I believe, may have been 13, and then D1 Baseball. Ball 15.
Well, anyway, the most important thing is we're going to be one of the 16 regional sites at this point. Disappointing, obviously. We'd obviously love to do that. But, you know, I know that Mike Mullis has told us before, Trent, that just to be in a regional period, no matter where we play, is a really big deal for this fan base. And you know, they're well coached. We know we have a lot of talent. They have a they have a lot of talent still to make a nice run in June.
No, I'm pumped, and I think look, I think this team, when you're in a scenario where you're playing for a host site and playing for a number one seed, you know, you're in rare air. And let's not forget, this is it's not like we've had dozens of these types of opportunities. It's becoming more the norm for us to be in the mix for it. But I'm just thrilled that, you know, that we're one of the sites that hopefully is going to be hosting. And then we'll take our chances from there with the other three teams in that regional, that we go try to win that. And then we see what happens around us. But it's a tremendous accomplishment when you have roughly 300 Division I programs to be one of the 16 that get a chance to host. So I don't care if we're the one or the 16, just getting an opportunity to play baseball here in Greenville would be really exciting.
Speaking of rare air, Trent, I mean, I you know, you'd have to go look at all the different programs in the country, but I'm sure quite a few SEC programs, but three straight. This would be three straight times with last year withstanding, you know, the COVID shortened. But the last three seasons that you could host a regional, we would be hosting three in a row. That's rare and that's impressive.
Never happened before, right, Bubba?
No.
So. Yeah, no doubt. And I mean, I know for all of us, it's you know, we're all getting accustomed to this kind of being the standard. I mean, Cliff's not hidden from it, and he openly talks about getting to Omaha. And our fan base is has kind of adjusted their sight lines to where it's now. It seems like it's a minimum expectation that people think we're supposed to be in the running for number one seed. I've certainly felt that all year just listening to people's comments when we lose a game. And I kept reminding people that whoever wins the national championship in this sport is likely going to have 15 or more losses on the season. So still, it's nice that expectations have been raised so high where we think we're supposed to be contending for number one seed every year. So here we are for the third year in a row. So maybe that's a fair expectation.
I think the thing is, I don't think the fans believe. I think the fans believe that we have to host a super regional to make it to Omaha, because every time we've gone on the road to play in a super, we've lost. So I think that's why the fans have honed in on so much, at least being a one seed and hosting, because they want that super regional in Greenville so bad. And of course, it would be nice, but we can go win a super regional on the road. We were 90 feet from doing it in Lubbock, and it's done every year. Somebody wins the Super Regional on the road and goes to Omaha every year. So there's no reason why we can't do it.
Yeah, no doubt. That one Super Regional victory came obviously out in Lubbock. And, you know, let's take a look at the conference tournament. We won't spend a ton of time on it, but, you know, after the Pirates wrapped up the regular season with those, you know, two consecutive losses, unfortunately, another poor outing against Memphis, 11-1 loss in seven innings. Got off to a great start. Connor Norby went yard, and I thought, okay, here we go. And then it was largely all downhill from that point on.
Yeah, it sucked. Let's not talk about that game. I mean, that's all that really needs to be said about that game. That game was terrible. Probably, you know, there's a probably too. That's the worst game we played all year.
Well, yeah, I agree with Kyle. Not a whole lot of reason to really discuss that. We just, I think Coach Godwin summed it up best. We got our butts kicked, and there's not much more you can say about that.
No, not at all. We can certainly move to Wednesday. And I tell you what, Trent, I'm really impressed. I will get your take as somebody that I've really liked a lot, watching him from the time he was here. I know he's had trouble with the injuries, but man, Gavin Williams, 10-0. I mean, that performance he did on Wednesday is just, you know, talking about getting accustomed to things. We're just so accustomed this year of how well he's pitched. It's just lights out, unbelievable. And I want to get your take on what he's done this season.
Well, I tell you, I don't know about you three guys. I'm sure you probably agree, but for the first time, really, I felt this way about Jake Agnos, and I feel this way about Gavin Williams. He makes me think that no matter who we get matched up with in a regional or super regional, even if it's a Kumar Rocker from Vanderbilt or a guy of that caliber, that we've got a guy we can run out there, and he can be just as dominant as Arkansas's number one, Vandy's number one, Florida's number one. I think Gavin Stuff has been that good. And right now, the only question is, you know, can he extend it through 8 or 9 innings? Because that's really been the only chink in his armor. And I think a lot of that's just because that's how we've managed him. You know, we've tried to get him out of there and kind of preserve his arm. And I don't think he's exceeded 100 pitches in a start this year. And so I could not be more impressed with Gavin Williams. I think he's just been spectacular every time he's taken the ball.
Did he pitch all 7 against Cincinnati? I believe he did, didn't he?
I think 7 is the max he's gone, but Bubba, you might have to check me on that. But I think that's as deep as he's gone. And like I said, I think a lot of that's been by design.
Yeah, I think so too. Right? We seem to like to get in the bullpen as soon as we can.
Yeah.
I mean, well, not only that, but the fact is, Trent, one of the things I love about Cliff, and obviously you've been around baseball for a long, long time, is the fact that he wants to make sure not only to win the game, but he doesn't want to hurt these guys as far as their future. When it comes to the professional ranks, I've always appreciated and respected that as far as his baseball, not only his baseball knowledge, but the fact that he really cares about his players.
Yeah, no doubt. And I think looking forward, one thing that I've reminded some of my friends is, you know, with us playing the same team 4 times in 40 hours all season long, it's caused us to use our bullpen in a way that's a little different than what it may be this coming weekend in a regional if we're able to win our way through, meaning we may see a much more traditional format of trying to get the starter to go 6, 7, 8 innings. And then these relievers, Mayhew, Bridges, Colmore particularly, that throw almost every game, they're just going to be asked to hopefully eat up 3 outs, maybe a piece, and that's it. Not coming in the 3rd or the 4th because they're running a 4 starter out there, you know, against the same team that's seen us, you know, 3 times previously. So I think it's going to be a little bit of a breath of fresh air. I think Gavin will probably be given a little bit more rope to play with. I think Wisenhunt certainly will. They stretched him out yesterday, the longest that he's gone as well. And so he had been on a pitch count of 50 and 70 the prior 2 starts and then been out for 3 or 4 weeks before that. So I think it sets up a lot differently this weekend, especially if we're able to win the opener on Friday night. And depending on what we choose to do with that, depending on who the opponent is.
Yeah, and for our listeners again, the regional host flights are supposed to be announced at 7, or supposed to be released at 8:30, and we will have that for you live right here on the Sports Objective. Tell your friends, tell your neighbors to tune in and watch along with us and find out for sure that we're hosting.
I feel pretty good about that. In fact, I know in Clearwater, one of the things I've been disappointed with, and I'll just say this, a great place to have the tournament. But when you guys were watching those games, did it make you upset to see that we didn't have not only – well, East Carolina fans, we understand why, because we're working and we are, you know, probably, what, 12, 14 hours away. I don't even – something like that. But it just seems like for a conference tournament, there would be more fans than at Clearwater.
I think two things, probably COVID-related, and UCF and USF both didn't have good seasons. I know they were in the championship game today, but I guess that was kind of unexpected. I think if you have the Knights and the Bulls with better seasons and in a non-COVID year, you'd have bigger crowds. But it ain't never been a packed house down there.
No.
No, so I mean, that
great facility and great location to have it, though.
Yeah, I'm not complaining about – that's my point. I'm not complaining about the facility at all. I'm saying that, I mean, my God, Clearwater, Florida, you have, like, the beach right there. Yeah. You have a lot to do there.
If you want the big crowd, you need to go back to a campus. And
I agree, Kyle.
Yeah.
I don't think people are waking up in Tampa, Florida, or Clearwater Beach and you know, having the American Athletic Conference tournament at the top of their list of what they're going to go do for entertainment in a given day. And it's just not a college town to begin with, even when USF's winning, it's not. And so I think that's just part of what comes with it. You're a long ways away from every fan base. And unless, you know, the length of the tournament is a factor, too. Unless people can afford to take off the whole week, it's tough to go down there. You don't know if your team's going to win or lose the first game. So if you try to make a vacation of it, that's really the only option, as opposed to trying to time it out and saying, hey, well, we'll come down the weekend if we're still alive. It's a tough trip to make. And, you know, then you factor in as well that if you know you've already got an NCAA tournament bid, then that makes it even tougher. You know, luckily the other 7 teams knew going in they had to win it. So I think those are all factors.
And I think you're right. If you're going to do the trip, you almost got to put it into mindset as, all right, if you go to and barbecue, whatever, you got to make it your week vacation. You know, it is going into Memorial Day, so you can make it your Memorial Day weekend and go down a few days early. So, I mean, it's – but, yeah, I mean, I don't – I'm not – I'm not screaming about moving it unless we're going to start rotating campus to campus. That gives East Carolina a chance to host probably pretty regularly. I mean, I don't know who would host more than us in baseball if they start moving it back to campus. I would imagine it would probably pretty much rotate between East Carolina, Tulane, and Wichita State, maybe Houston if it started going back to campuses. But I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Don't forget Wichita State in there. Yeah, Wichita State.
Yeah, I think I said them. Before change the subject briefly right before the regional slates come out, what did you guys think of the softball hire? On paper, it looks like a good hire.
Go ahead, Trent.
Go ahead, Bubba. No, go ahead, Bubba.
I thought it was an excellent hire. I mean, you're getting a guy that has 13 years of head coaching experience, a decade down at Charleston Southern, and accomplished some things there that their program had never accomplished, like going to the NCAA tournament, and then up at George Washington, he took the Colonials to the tournament this year, and they nearly knocked off Louisiana. I think lost an extra inning ball game to Louisiana, and had one of the top players in the country. I'm trying to recall her name, but had a girl that hit close to 20 home runs.
Yeah, and you talk about coaching at Charleston Southern, and then at GW. So, you know, he's obviously knows the area, South Carolina, then the DC area. So. Knows this whole region for recruiting purposes, so I like the hire.
Yeah, I actually reached out to Jeff Barber a couple of days ago after the hire, just to get any thoughts Jeff might have had. Jeff's obviously the athletic director now down at Charleston Southern, and he had nothing but good things to say. I didn't know how much they may have overlapped because he left about the time Jeff got there, but Jeff said he was a terrific coach and a really good guy as well. He said he thought he would do very, very well here, so I was excited. That Jeff usually shoots straight with me. Our relationship goes back to Jeff's days as the athletic director at Liberty, and at the time that you know they were recruiting my son, and he ended up going there to play. And so he usually shoots straight, and he felt he was really high on this guy as well. So I'm excited.
I got a tough question for you. We're minutes away now from the host site. If Liberty is going to be in the Greenville Regional, is that going to be tough for you? To have Liberty and East Carolina.
Yeah, I'd prefer. So I've got on my I've got my Pirate shirt on, but then underneath, in honor of my son, I've got my Liberty shirt on as well. So not for me. I think probably more for my son, because he'd like to really root for them both. I mean, he was raised a Pirate, but right. You know, he's we both have a deep affinity for Liberty as well, but they're definitely, I can't see them not getting in. They've got a mid 30s RPI. I think they'll be probably a really high three. But yeah, my preference would probably be they'd not be here. If it is, then it is. So.
Yeah. Like you're saying, Trent, I think they're 37-14. And with that RPI, it would be an absolute crime if they didn't get in.
Yeah, it was interesting yesterday, you know, watching, UNCW lost a heartbreaker today. I don't feel good about them getting in now. They're in the high 50s. Campbell got upset by Presbyterian. Liberty got upset, by Jacksonville. And then obviously East Carolina not winning. So all of those kind of had an effect. Campbell will be another interesting one to watch just because they've got a really high 30s RPI. I think they're going to get in, but they may be competing with the Georgia Tech, Florida State, UNC's, Virginia's of the world, potentially. Wow. And Campbell doesn't have very many top 100 wins. I think they've got 8 top 100 wins. So that's the kind of thing I'm really interested to see in a COVID year like this, how it gets evaluated. Now, how do you evaluate the Big Ten when they only played each other? I mean, it's going to be fascinating.
Is that what? The selection show, guys, Bubba, is – Trent, whoever knows, is it 12 o'clock tomorrow on ESPN2? Or
I think it's ESPNU at noon tomorrow.
12 o'clock tomorrow on the U, okay.
Yeah.
What Jacksonville did in their conference tournament, winning the A-Sun, I guess it is, knocking off Liberty, 16 wins for the Dolphins. And they've had excellent baseball down through the years, but this year was not one of those. But they're obviously playing good baseball at the right time.
Yeah, they stole a bit, and Presbyterian stole one as well yesterday, beating Campbell down there in Fayetteville. I mean, so that's
Yeah, no doubt about it. But getting back to the Pirates before we talk about the regional host sites that are about to be unveiled, you know, Trent, you were touching on, some of the pitching. You talked about the solid start by Carson Wisenhunt. Maybe didn't have his best command, had four walks, but he found a way to work through that, allowed just the one run and one hit in those five innings and through 90 pitches, like you referenced. But I was really encouraged. The game 2-1 in that second game against UCF, and you had Garrett Saylor and also CJ Mayhew, who had rough outings in their first appearance in the tournament, really pitched well, and they combined to work something like close to seven innings and struck out probably 10 or 11 guys and maybe didn't even issue a single free pass.
All right, Bubba, check your Twitter. Saylor, we're 1 minute past.
Saylor and Mayhew both were absolutely filthy. That was what, you know, Saylor particularly is capable of doing. His stuff you can see on television just was moving tremendously. So I'm hopeful he'll springboard with that, because he's got the ability. He and Carter Spivey both have the stuff. Yeah. It's just a matter of executing it.
I was going to ask you those two pitchers, so I'll go ahead now while we're waiting to hear the regional host sites any second now. We should be finding out. I know Bubba's checking his Twitter feed, but Trent, those two guys, we're going to make a deep run in June for the regional, super regional in Omaha. Those two guys right there you just mentioned are two guys that I've had on my radar as far as pitchers. We've got to have them to pitch. What, you know, they have the talent. It's not like they're pitching above their talent, Trent. They've just got to pitch up to their talent, right?
Yeah, that's how I feel. I mean, I feel like personally, I don't know about you, Kyle, but I feel like you know what you're going to get with Mayhew and with Colemore and with Bridges. They've been run out there now time after time. I'm very comfortable that those guys, I mean, they've been ridiculously good, particularly Mayhew and Colemore all season long, you know, maybe just one or two minor bumps. And so it really becomes outside those three, who are the next arms? Landon Ginn is obviously on the come. I mean, they're beginning to put him in more and more high leverage situations. But to me, Saylor is and AJ Wilson are probably the next two that, you know, from a lefty righty stuff standpoint, I think they trust an awful lot. So, you know, that we saw yesterday from Saylor, that was really encouraging.
Yeah, Saylor to me always seems to be all or nothing. But when he's on, when he's got his stuff, he can be unhittable at times.
Yeah, guys, we just learned EC will host, as Bubba just found out, and also Justin Butts, one of our viewers, just put it up there that they will host.
All right, so do we have all 16 sites?
Well, I'm sure he'll get to that, but I wanted to say that before so we could get it on there as fast as possible. But folks viewing right now, so we definitely know they will host, and we'll get the other teams up there in just a second. Trent, that's
Louisiana Tech is hosting. Just saw Louisiana Tech is hosting, so that's a really interesting one.
So yeah,
they were 19 in the RPI going into. They were 19 in the RPI going into today, and they lost. So that's just really fascinating to me. I don't know. I was not expecting that.
I had heard multiple times that CUSA would, because of the amount of teams they had ranked in the upper echelon of the RPI, that they would definitely get a host site. So it would just depended on which team. And so La Tech gets it.
South Carolina's also hosting.
There could be your ODU one seed.
I'm reading here. We got a from Tom McClellan that obviously that we're getting an email right now that we will host. So that's a reliever there, and not a surprise that we would be hosting, but it's also good to see it when it's official that we're hosting. So it's a good thing, right, Bubba?
Yeah, no doubt. And Dave, I have those for you. It's going to cross by the screen here momentarily, but the Austin Regional, you know, University of Texas is hosting South Carolina, Oregon, Arkansas, TCU, Florida. We've already talked about the Pirates, Tennessee, Texas Tech, and that's all that's been released so far. Tucson, University of Arizona, Mississippi State, Stanford, Notre Dame, and then La Tech, like Trent mentioned, and then Ole Miss, and obviously Vanderbilt.
There you go.
There you go. By SEC, the way, guys.
How many sites was that for the SEC, Bubba?
I'll get back to you. Just check out the bottom of the screen.
All right. Bubba's getting bombarded there by children and wife.
Yeah, by the way, Kyle, I want to give this for fans. In the email from Tom McClellan, appreciate him, the AD, assistant AD for relations, for media relations. He actually has tickets are going to go on sale for Pirate fans Wednesday at 9 a.m. for the general public. All session tickets are available $90, $72, and $60, depending on the locations, while tickets for single games are 15, 12, and 10, and will go on sale Friday at 11 a.m. if available. So I will go ahead and tell you right now, Trent, I'm not a betting man, but if I were, you better get your tickets, even if you can't go to all the games.
Dave, 100% capacity?
I'll have to look through. You gave me homework there. I was just reading. That was the beginning of the email.
I would assume so. I would assume it would be 100% capacity.
Yeah. There's no way.
That was the word. Originally, the word was, yeah, it was going to be 100% capacity, right around 5,300, I think.
Okay.
Yeah. So, there's nothing in here that says it's not. So I'll assume that it is.
Yeah.
There's
nothing in the SEC. My unofficial count, Kyle, with the SEC is 6. I think there's 6 host sites for the SEC.
Okay. All right. That's a lot. But it is the SEC.
So well, I think the surprising one for me is South Carolina. I think that surprises me, to be honest with you. I'd be very curious to see who's there as one.
Yeah, you said it. You definitely said it. But let me ask you this, Trent. One of the things I know that we've talked to Coach O and that you obviously hear regional, but do you think this is more about geography being region as far as having the host sites with COVID this year versus maybe is it less fair this year than normal because of that?
Yeah, I really don't know. I think until we see the selection show tomorrow and get the full picture, it's going to be hard to say because I think actually it's 7 SEC sites, Kyle, 7. I just got a text from my son and said it was 7, not 6. So we're doing math on the fly, but I think, I think the question for me, Dave, would be if South Carolina is hosting, they're clearly not hosting as 1. So, you know, who is the 1 in that region? That could very likely be ODU.
Yeah. ODU.
You know, you would think, but I think until we see the full picture, it's hard to know because obviously if you're going to make ODU the 1, I think it would be unfair to make them the 1 with the season they've had and then send them halfway around the country to do it. So I think this makes it a little more fair. And maybe that did or didn't play into South Carolina hosting. I'm not sure. So I guess for me, I'll just withhold, you know, an opinion until I see the full picture tomorrow of who's in and who's not.
And what I want to know is how many ACC schools are they going to stick in our regional? I mean, will they do multiple ACC schools in one regional? I mean, could you see both the Tar Heels and the Wolfpack in our regional as a 2 and a 3?
Or Duke.
Yeah, Duke and Notre Dame. Right. Yeah. Ooh, see. I'll tell you what, we own Duke. And I actually mentioned this to Bubba. I said, you know, back during the regular season, you know, we have owned Duke. We beat them every time we play them. I said, watch, we'll play them in a regional and they'll beat us.
You got to give them props today. I mean, they haven't won a ACC title since 1961. And what Chris Pollard, that he's done at Duke, being originally from Durham, the baseball program was, I know, Trent, you know, it hasn't been, they haven't been able to hang their hat on baseball, but he comes in and they've really done a nice job of building that program. And he has two super regionals appearances, plus he has now an ACC championship. You got to give him a raise. They have a new AD in Durham. You got to give that guy a raise already, I think. I'm not his agent.
I am a huge, huge Chris Pollard fan. I think Chris Pollard, when he went to App State, I watched what he did. And I'm going to tell you something. Duke is not an easy place to recruit to for baseball, given the scholarship rules. I know a number of kids that they've recruited, but when you start talking about, you know, 25% money to go to Duke to play baseball, that can be a limiting factor for a lot of kids. He does a terrific job. And Yeah, if I had my druthers, I would rather avoid them right now with the way they're playing and how well he coaches. But you've got, look, you've got VCU, who's won, I think, 20 straight. You've got Liberty. You've got Duke. You've got State. You've got possibly UNC. You know, they're all right here. I think I counted on my own fingers maybe 8 or 9, 2 or 3 seeds that were right in our geographical area that you can make an argument for. Charlotte's another one.
But, Charlotte didn't do us any favors.
You know, any of them could get sent here as a 2 or 3 and maybe multiple.
Go ahead, Trent. We have some lag there. Go ahead. Was he done?
Yeah, Campbell's another one that you can throw in there as a possible 3.
Yeah, and Justin Hare, normally we play Campbell, but obviously with the ridiculous American Conference schedule, we couldn't have a midweek, those midweek games that another great coach with Justin Hare and a lot of exciting games with Campbell, especially with it being so close from Buies Creek to Greenville as a short drive for both schools. I wouldn't say necessarily a rivalry, but it's certainly right over there. Oh, I know that. I know. I'm not knocking them at all. I'm just saying that I'm just saying it's a good game for us to play for these two lines.
No, and you know, I was saying earlier with La Tech getting that bid for Conference USA, Charlotte didn't do us any favors. Had they went and won that conference tournament, they would probably be hosting right now instead of La Tech and you know, taking some more of these regional teams like Duke or Liberty or whoever may be potentially away from Greenville. I think we're about to be set up for a really difficult regional.
Look, you know, I think if you're Cliff Goblin,
yeah,
right now,
schools I just mentioned, there's no.
Sorry, I was just going to say with, he would say they roll out the baseballs anytime, anywhere, any place. I mean, you got to have that mentality, especially, you know, every team, guys. There's not going to be a cupcake. I mean, what cupcakes would you see that it would be anywhere close to us that we would be? I mean, I know there's some that you could argue matchups and. Trent, you would know more about that than I would. But as far as this point, you got to respect that look at Quinnipiac. They came in, they beat us the first game 2 years ago. I mean, there's anybody, anytime, any place can beat us. And so it's not disrespectful to East Carolina. I'm giving respect to the other schools that will come to Greenville.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, you're going to see good baseball teams right now because it's postseason play. But, you know, it'll be interesting to see. Like we mentioned, Charlotte and Trent alluded to, you know, we're talking about who's going to be the 2 seed. Will it be Duke? Will it be State? Will, you know, UVA? I mean, it could be Charlotte. Charlotte's going to be a 2 somewhere, most likely. So, you know, where will they be placed? I mean, this is potentially could be a very interesting regional. South Carolina, the only other team in our immediate area hosting. You figure ODU is going to be the 1 there, which puts South Carolina as a 2 there. But who knows? If ODU, if South Carolina is the 1 and they put ODU as a 1 somewhere else, I don't know where else they could be a 1. We'd have to look at the sites again. But if they don't put ODU there as the 1, then and South Carolina is the 1, then, you know, who knows what that regional could look like.
Yeah, I can't see that. They lost 3 of their last 4 series. They went out early in their conference tournament. They're, you know, 20 plus losses. I can't see South Carolina as a 1, but stranger things have happened.
Yeah,
I've got to feel like that's a spot for ODU.
Yeah, no question about it. That would be disrespect to ODU. You were talking about earlier Gonzaga putting them out to the West. Wouldn't that be the disrespect to a team that has a high RPI like ODU? I mean, they played really well this year.
Yeah, they've earned the right to at least stay in this time zone. So hopefully, you know, hopefully that's what's going to happen for them. I think for me, specific to the Greenville region, what I'll be most interested in is that, you know, is who the 4 is. I think there's about as wide a margin in the 4s. You know, you could have somebody like an Army that's a 4, which is no joy to line up and play. And you've got maybe teams at the other end of the spectrum where you feel like you have a more favorable matchup that don't have don't have a top 5 round type arm.
Yeah, you know, lots of times you're right. You look at your 4 seed opponent. You go, yeah, okay, but then who's their star ace? Who's their Friday night guy?
Right.
And you know, that can be an issue, like you mentioned with Army. And so, I'm with you there. That's always interesting because then, if you want to do something different with your starters and save Gavin, you can't do it.
Yeah, another no team. Doubt. I'm
not going to give anybody.
Go ahead, Trent.
Go ahead, Bubba. Well, I was going to say that I'm not going to give anybody any bulletin board material, but just looking at who the automatic qualifiers have been in our regional area, meaning maybe a 2 or 3 state area, there's definitely one or two that I would much prefer as a 4 seed over somebody like an Army, who's projected to be a 4 seed. That Army's had a history of stinging teams, so I'm not going to again give any bulletin board material, but there are one or two that I would much prefer to have as a 4, some of these AQ automatic qualifiers that wouldn't have gotten in without winning their conference tournament. So we just hope maybe one of them lands here that, you know, that anybody that comes here is going to be good and they're going to have earned their way. But there can be big differences in those 4 seeds. All it takes is one arm, and you just hope you don't draw a 4 seed that has that arm.
Let's send Army out to Vandy and get a nice pitching war for game 1.
I'm good with that. I mean, if Army comes here, so be it. That's fine. I'm just using them as an example of kind of a generic example, really, of a really quality program that tends to get a 4 seed. And they're traditionally somebody that's been in the tournament some versus maybe a team that has not been in the tournament much, or a team that that really didn't have a very strong year, but then just got hot at the right time for 4 days. Whatever the names of those teams are, and we'll know that more tomorrow. But I think for me, I think there's way more differences among the 4 seeds than there often are among the 2s or the 3s. I guess that's the point I was making.
Yeah, no, you're right. I agree with you 100%. You get you 2s and 3s are going to be pretty much solid throughout. But you get that 4 seed, it could be somebody that shouldn't even be there, or somebody that plays in a weaker conference, has a Friday night ace, and then you're in a war. I'm with you 100%.
Another regional team that we haven't mentioned is VCU. VCU was 37-13. They won the A-10.
Yeah, and I always have to remind myself that the Rams are in the A-10 now and not the Colonial. You A-10 champions there for the VCU Rams.
No, I mean,
I think they've won 20 straight, Bubba. Is that right? I think they've won 20 in a row.
I believe that's correct. It's something like that.
Yes, another team that you probably. Hey, what do you guys think on these one bid leagues? That if I'm a one, and I guess you kind of almost don't want to because you don't want teams to feel like they don't have anything to play for. But these one bid leagues, when you have a team like Jacksonville win your conference tournament, then you might not get your team that's been good all year in, and that just doesn't seem fair to me. That a team gets hot once the conference tournament get in, and then the team that was good all year gets left at home.
Well, that's the same thing in the NCAA.
It's a great argument. Yeah, you see that with basketball every year, Kyle. You look at us in 1993 with that CAA title. I mean, we were far from being the best team in the league, but we got hot the right 4 days and got in. And so, I've thought that for a long, long time that there had to be a better way to do it, but I haven't been able to come up with what that is to make the rest of the season meaningful once a team's out of contention for something. But you're right. I mean, in baseball particularly, the course of the 3.5-month season is certainly more valuable than 4 or 5 days are.
Can baseball – do you think the sport is to a popularity – this is for all three of you – do you think the sport is to a popularity that we could support an NIT, like a 16-team – tournament for the best 16 that don't get in? Do you think we're to that point yet with college baseball?
I would vote for it, but I know Trent's going to say as far as the quality of baseball would not be that good. I guess that's what you're leaning, but I would have a problem with it. But especially when you look at ESPN with all their streaming stuff and with the other networks, they need a lot of quality. They need programming. So I think that would be good for them. I don't know how it would be good for the sport.
I'm going to bet Trent's argument is you don't want to take away from the NCAA tournament special to make it.
No, look, I don't have any argument at all. I would say that the quality is – I would say baseball is probably the most you know, if you look at whoever the 120th best team is, it's probably the most diverse in terms of how the talent is spread out across the country. There's good players everywhere. I think it's more just would people watch it, because I would watch it, but I don't think that the average fan, many of whom don't even follow college baseball for the majority of the year, you know, at the NCAA tournament level until it's an event, you know, until the regionals become an event. I don't think it's quite mainstream enough yet that would probably work in terms of having anything to sell. I think the quality of play would be fine. There's a ton of really good teams that are not going to make this NCAA tournament.
Bubba?
You're on mute. You're on mute, Bubba. Unmute yourself.
Sorry, I was looking at my laptop. I was using multi-devices there. But, you know, kind of thinking about it, you know, from an East Carolina fan's perspective, you know, East Carolina going to, quote, baseball NIT, and it'd be like some other programs that I won't mention, you know, in basketball, you know, where they're not very fired up about it, and understandably so. You can imagine what the Pirate Nation and other schools that are good year in, year out in baseball, like East Carolina, how they would feel about it. But I agree with Trent, and there wouldn't be a shortage of quality teams. I don't think the competition would be bad where it wouldn't make for a good product.
You know, and I guess you're right, though, about maybe some teams not really caring about it and would be, I don't want to go. But, you know, that might not be the case also. You may have some powers every year that want to go. I guess it kind of depends. There's always two kinds of bad seasons. You got a young baseball team that was playing well at the end of the year, and you hate to see that season end and got off to a slow start, or do you have a senior laden team that pissed away a good year and now you're kind of ready to get it over with? So I guess there's two kinds of teams like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and then you have to factor in the draft as well, or pitchers that, you know, or guys that are potentially going to be, you know, a 19th round draft prospect. Are they going to be willing to throw extra innings for something that maybe they don't deem to be, you know, important enough to really give their best effort to? So I think that's the other thing with the timing of the major league draft and college baseball. It's so different than the other sports. You probably run into that too, where I'm not sure that guys that were draft eligible, and like this year's team for us, we've got a lot more guys that are draft eligible than probably the average fan realizes because of right. The COVID year. We've got a really large amount of our quote star players that, you know, are draft eligible this year. So I don't know. That'd be the other thing you'd have to factor in too.
Let me ask a sidebar on that note real quick, Trent. I was going to ask you that later in the show, but I would ask you now. Mentioning the draft, you being a scout in the past, how many guys, I know Coach O has said he thinks six guys will be drafted. How many guys do you think will be drafted from this team, if you off the top of your head?
Well, I feel certain, obviously, about Gavin and about Norby and about Francisco. I don't think there's any question about those three. And I've had a chance to just, in sitting at games, just talk with a few scouts about those guys. You know, interestingly, a lot of the conversation they've had with me has just been about the potential ceiling of Wisenhunt kind of moving forward and how high they are on him, at least right now, kind of projecting him after next year, where he could go. But I don't really know, Dave. I'll be honest with you. After those three guys this year, I'm not really sure, because the draft is shortened, and I'm not sure who else is going to get drafted outside of those three guys in a 20-round draft. I think that's what's so different. So I don't know about a guy, for example, like Bryson Worrell, who last year was, you know, was projected to probably go relatively high, and I don't know how he's viewed right now. I haven't had, you know, a lot of conversation this year because of the limited contact, and you know, I had season tickets and was able to go, but obviously it wasn't the same this year in terms of talking to people like in the past. And so I really don't know, outside those three guys, what scouts are thinking about who else on this Pirate roster may be drafted this year.
If you're just joining us, we want to let you know about 20 minutes ago or so, East Carolina will be hosting a regional, and setting the tone, I guess, for this week. In your mind, if you're Cliff Godwin, who would you have for your starters? Obviously, it's going to be Gavin. We know about Wisenhunt. Who else would you give the ball to, as far as if you're for games three and I guess put four. If we need
them. Hopefully there's just three.
Yeah, I know.
Well, there you go. There's
your I'll let you go first.
I'd go with the three guys we've been starting. And then if there's a game four and five, I don't know. It really doesn't matter who you start when you get in those situations where we're doing Johnny Holstaff, because you ain't going to play guys more than a couple innings at a time. But probably Cam Colmore would be somebody I would start if we have to play more than three.
Well, he started one game, right? If my memory serves me right.
Yeah, they used him.
He started up in Cincinnati.
Yeah, that's the only game I remember him actually starting. But it seems like he's good if you get him, bring him in like a middle reliever, right, Trent? I mean, that's where he's really, really good in the middle innings that we desperately need.
I'm really hopeful we can use Cam and Mayhew and Bridges the way that I think they'd really like to use them, which is in high leverage relief situations between the sixth and ninth inning. I'm hopeful that we can do that now that we're potentially, if we win, only going to have to play three times in a weekend and not more than that. Now, the good news is we're perfectly prepared if we got to come through the loser's bracket, because you got to keep in mind there could be teams in this regional, and chances are there will be, that have not been in our situation this year. They've been playing three-game series all weekend with midweek games. We've been in a situation where, again, we played the same offense four times in 40 hours in conference play all year, and I just don't know if fans really appreciate how difficult that is to manage when you're calling pitches and trying to set up pitching scenarios. So I think my hope would be that we would get a one seed, and we would get paired with a four seed that the coaching staff feels confident enough in terms of the matchup that we can do what we want to do on Friday night and go with Gavin on Saturday, Wiz and Hunt on Sunday, and slam the door on that thing. I think for me it would probably be Tyler Smith. You hand the ball to him in game one if you have the right matchup. You may have to throw Gavin. You may have to throw Wiz. Depending on what the matchup is that you get, because you've got to win game one and you can't mess around with it. But I've got confidence if they hand the ball to Tyler Smith or if they decide to hand it to Cooch, that they're going to feel like they've got a matchup there they like. Again, we'll be able to use our relievers a little differently if we're not having to play two games in a day and not play the same team four times in a row.
And, Trent, we have Shel Powell is asking us a lot here on our comments, one of our viewers about he's asking is Cooch in the rotation. He's been asking about if you could give some insight on Cooch. He's asking as far as the regional, will he be in the rotation?
Yeah, I don't know. My opinion would be, and I'd love to hear y'all's as well. I don't know what the coaches are thinking with that. I think based on the way they've used Tyler and Cooch in the last week and a half to 2 weeks, I think to me, going into the weekend, that it seems like probably that Tyler Smith right now, if you had to number him, would probably be considered the number three guy just based on usage. I don't know who number four is. Maybe, like Kyle said, it's Johnny Holstaff with using an opener and then a series of relievers. I think that's where it's a strength that we have pitched so many guys this year, in key situations. But I feel like that Cooch is going to play an important role at some point this weekend, whether it's, being a situational lefty, a long reliever, whatever it may be. I feel like that Cooch, they trust him. He's done – we know who that guy is. He's done a lot of things during his time here. And it's just a matter of him, getting some confidence. I thought he threw two pretty good innings, obviously, yesterday. Was it yesterday? My days were all running together. Whenever he threw, threw two really good
innings. Yeah, he started game two.
Yeah, and so, I think as of right now, you have to feel like Cooch is probably going to be he's definitely in the plans. It's just a matter of what his role is going to be.
No question. And again, Trent, there's what about the freshmen that have come, guys like Ginn that come to mind, AJ Wilson? There's a lot of guys that are young guys that, which is the good news for Pirate fans. Not looking past the, obviously we've got a long road still left of the season, but the good news is our future's bright. It's not like a senior led team where we're going to lose a whole bunch of guys. We're talking about the draft, but a whole bunch of guys we're losing this year and next year is going to be thin. Cliff and Jeff Palumbo, all those guys have done a nice job of recruiting. So we're just reloading every single year.
Yeah, Josh Gross will be another one. I know we've talked about him on the show before, but they've obviously shown a lot of confidence in him, putting him out there in some important situations. I think Ginn's on the come. So I think Ginn and Gross are two righties that, you know, that you're going to see, you know, in maybe matchups that they're going to come in and throw a little bit as well. We mentioned Garrett Saylor earlier. A.J. Wilson, obviously, is a lefty, has thrown some important innings in the last week. So there's a number of guys out there they trust. But I think your starters, you know, for the three games are going to be some combination of Gavin, Wiz, Tyler Smith, and probably Cooch Maynor in some role. Like I said, hopefully if we win, you just got to play three games. And that would be really nice because we haven't done that in a long, long time in terms of, you know, not, it was only a non-conference play, but we played, you know, a three-game series. We've been playing four per weekend since then.
No question. What about in the bats, too, with this team? We know that the bats, they can get on a guy early. And if you had the, like you're talking about, the right matchup, if you can go ahead and get the guys with a lot of offense, you get in that bullpen real early in the game, especially game one, kind of set the tone for the regional. I think that the one of the things that we've talked to the guys from the 19 team, Trent, I know Bryant Packard and others, is that they were really tired going into that regional, super regional, having to win those games the way they did. It was such a great atmosphere for Greenville, for us to win that regional, but then they didn't have a lot left in the tank when they went to Louisville.
So it's very important. Go ahead, Kyle. Yep.
What was the question? I don't even know what the question was.
You weren't paying attention.
Well, I heard Dave, you talking about running out of energy going into the super regionals. What was the question to begin with?
I was talking about the very fact that we need to do well, set the tone on game one, go ahead and win the thing like Trent's talking about, instead of having to come back like 19.
I think losing game one would be ideal. I think going into loser's bracket and having to play extra games, use extra pitchers, I think that's the way to go. Of course you want to win game one. You want to win game one, game two, game three, get the hell out of there, and then go to the super regionals and do it again. Win game one, game two of the super, and let's go to Omaha. Ideally, we play five games the next 2 weeks. So, I mean, that's what you want to do. Play five games the next 2 weeks. We these boys have got to win one more game right now to make it to Omaha than they did all year to sweep a weekend series. They got to win five games to make it to Omaha. So, of course, let's win game one Friday night, set the tone. Hopefully, we won't have to throw Gavin. You can put Gavin out there against whoever we're playing Saturday, and then let's get to Sunday and make somebody beat us twice.
Yeah, that sounds great. You know, one thing I was looking at, guys, that I don't think we should underestimate either is, you know, the difference in this team at home versus on the road or at a neutral site this year.
Yeah.
I mean, this we'll offense, you know, we're a different team when Gavin is on the mound, obviously, in so many ways, but we've been a different team at home. That's why I think our record at home this year was 27-4.
That's correct.
And we were basically one game over 500 on the road or at neutral sites. I think we were like 12-11 or 13-12 on the road. So 27-4 at home. So, you know, I think that offense will look a little different this weekend. I think guys will get rested. They'll get back. Look, let's don't discount. And I'm not making an excuse for them. It's just a fact. But we're the only team that was in this situation. We were in a hotel for 10 nights down in Florida between flying down Wednesday to play USF and then staying there as part of this tournament. So 10 nights in a hotel, you are not going to play the same way you are when you're fully, completely rested at home. And so I expect that'll show offensively. I think these guys will get back, get a good lift in tomorrow, start to get the legs under them, eat the same foods they're used to eating, quit eating hotel breakfast every morning. You know, all of that. And I think that offense will look a lot different Friday, Saturday, Sunday. And there'll be some guys that maybe get their legs back under them, that hit the ball a little bit better. So, you know, the numbers prove it. We're 27-4 at home. So whoever's coming in here is going to know that. That is not chump change at all. That is a serious, serious mark at home that we've thrown up.
And you talk about being at home and our record at home. And this is the first time all year in a full house. And it's right, really going to be a home field advantage. I mean, those boys should be fired up. I mean, they should be super fired up. Obviously, anytime you're going to play in a regional at home, you're going to be fired up. And now they're going to run out there for the first time with those stands packed, with the jungle loud. It's going to feel like they've been in a time. The guys who have been here, it's going to feel like they stepped in a time machine. The young guys, it's going to be the first time some of those guys have experienced it.
That's a great point.
And how about the very – you talk about a big factor, Trent, speaking of the home field advantage, having the men and women out there in the jungle, the screaming fans. This isn't a typical baseball atmosphere as far as like just a ho-hum kind of thing. People in Greenville take their baseball very serious.
Yeah, no, there's no question about that, and I think that's very well known nationally. And I'm just excited that – like some of the SEC schools have already been able to do that, we're at least going to get some of that before this season ends. And I think people will be really pumped to be in that stadium. I think the kids will be really pumped to have their fans finally back in there and be able to play in front of them.
Yeah, and, you know, if I remember correctly, I'm trying to remember this right, and not that this has that much bearing on anything, just kind of an interesting note with the stadium impact. The alcohol sales rule, where it didn't have to be just in the tent, but it could be sold anywhere in the stands. That went into effect last year, and we really didn't get a chance to enjoy it. So this is going to be the first time we're going to have a packed stadium with beer flowing.
That may be the best point I've heard made all night. That's a good catch, Kyle.
There you go. A whole nother level of guys getting fired up. So you got to stay cool. Got to have something cool to drink out there.
No beer will be spilled on any fans this weekend, right?
No, it'll all be consumed.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, we have, I know, Bubba, we have some comments from the viewers that we have questions we want to get to Trent. So,
yeah, we've already touched on this a little bit, but Josh Thomas asked, he said, y'all, who do you think will, obviously, the Pirates will be the number one seed, but who do you think will be some of the teams coming to the regional in Greenville? NC State and Liberty have been mentioned by Baseball America and D1 Baseball. I was talking to Corey Glore about it. He seems to think it may be Duke rather than NC State. We shall see. Norfolk State's been one of the number four seeds mentioned, obviously, only a couple hours up the road. What are your thoughts?
I was not Duke. It could be the where's Charlotte going? Charlotte's got to be a two somewhere.
Yeah, you got Charlotte. You've got potentially, if they get in, both UVA and UNC, that'll be a two or a three. You've got Campbell, if they get in, that'll be a three. And so any of those, you got VCU that we mentioned earlier. You've got Liberty, and you've got Duke and NC State. So I think any of those eight or nine schools, you know, are kind of common sense possibilities of being a two or a three. That's what they're all going to fall in at if they get in. And so all of those regionally make sense. So some combination of one of those ACC schools and maybe maybe an A-10 school, maybe a Atlantic Sun school in Liberty, Campbell. So who knows? Any of those are possibilities. And, you know, you really have Vandy and Tennessee and South Carolina as the next closest regionals to spread those out among. Georgia Tech is another one that, you know, potentially is going to be in. So any of those could be in here. I mean, I would think it'd be some combination of those schools, though, with the two or the three.
Yeah, and something we're forgetting, too, over the years, typically there's more ACC teams hosting in this area. But your Northeastern schools have to go somewhere. And we may be the closest spot for a lot of those schools.
That's a great point. Yeah, I think looking at it, Kyle, that I feel like a lot of those are going to be four seeds. Right. But there are some that could be a three. So it'll be interesting. But, yeah, just our surrounding area in our state and state above us, you know, you're going to have, you know, six to eight schools that are twos or threes. So you feel like they're going to probably land here, but you never know.
A couple of teams from the Northeast to keep an eye on. You have Northeastern, who Trent referenced earlier. They walked off UNC Wilmington today in the bottom of the ninth, or excuse me, bottom of the 10th. And I think they're 36-11 or something. They have a very, very impressive record.
Well, Fairfield.
And they were 20-3. And then you have Fairfield, who played nothing but conference games all year long. I think they were 38-2, 38-3, something like
37-3.
Yeah.
Yep.
Are they going to be a three seed, or what are they going to be?
D1 baseball had them listed, for what it's worth, as one of the last five in, which would make them a four. So, again, they could. There's no telling where they could be. Potentially, especially if they're a four. If you're a four, kind of all bets are off. They'll ship you anywhere. So,
yeah. And for that conference, the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference gets two teams, and you have Ryder and Fairfield.
Hopefully, Fairfield will get in.
I can't imagine.
Come on. Everybody talks about, I've heard that argument all year long from baseball experts, talking about conference-only games and the conference week. But you can say what you want to. Anybody knows anything about baseball, that is really difficult to win 37 out of 40 games. They need to get some – it feels like Rodney Dangerfield. They get no respect. Maybe they're not a brand-name team, and maybe they're not playing in a big conference, but they deserve respect for 37 out of 40 games. Come on.
Yeah, no doubt. And I can assure you that if they got given a four, that's not a four anybody's going to be excited to play. That team knows nothing but winning. I mean, winning 37 out of the 40 times that you take the field, that's insane. I don't care who you're playing. And so, again, if they do get a four, and that looks like the likely scenario, that's not no coach is going to say it out loud, but that's not a four you're going to really lick your chops about getting a shot at.
Yeah, and you're right. Winning, people do not seem to grasp how much winning breeds winning. And even if you're winning at your level, and your level of competition isn't the same level as our level of competition, when you got a team that does nothing but winning, it's hard to beat them. They'll play up to the level of their competition just because of the intensity they play with, and they think they're supposed to win. I mean, look back when A&T beat us in football. You had a program that was used to doing nothing but winning versus a program that couldn't put the shoes on right. So it's the same kind of thing. Fairfield's 37-3. All they know is winning, and that's going to be a dangerous four seed for anybody.
No doubt about it. I know we've got some other comments. Quickly, we can get in Bubba, and then I know you want to do the automatic qualifiers.
Yeah. So Johnny Robertson chimed in. He said, I'm sure that the Pirates will be ready to roll this weekend. But is it possible that that wasted trip to Houston yielded some negative effects that carried over? It seemed as they were a bit out of sync out of that. Pitt had a two-week layoff and then finished the season 3-9.
Yeah, if we ain't over that by now, this team's not very mentally tough, and we weren't going farther in the regionals anyway.
Yeah, I don't buy that either. I just think you've got to look at each individual weekend for what it is. And I think we played a really good Tulane team, and I felt like played one of our best baseball weekends of the year. We went to Cincy, and we were on the road, and we played a team that, look, teams were matching up with us. I mean, very rarely did they stick their number one up against Gavin with having two games on Friday. I'll continue to say it, playing the same team four times in 40 hours is a really, really difficult task to win three out of four. It just is. And I think there'll be a whole new animal. And I think we went through and had a spectacular season winning 41 games. That would have been a great year under normal circumstances of playing a Tuesday or Wednesday game in a three-game series. I think to do it with four-game weekends was a real testament to the season we had. I think that's what we're going to see now moving into the postseason. I really do.
We also had one more question. He said, why are your thoughts on how early the potential regional sites were selected, and with narrowing it down to those 20, and do you think maybe, one of those Conference USA teams, for instance, may have gotten left out as a result?
No, they were in the 20. La Tech, Charlotte.
Yeah, that's true.
The only Conference USA team that got left out was Old Dominion because they didn't put in a bid.
Right.
I think that worked out really well, actually.
Yeah, and like we were talking about before, the ODU situation, they don't have they just need to improve their stadium or get a better relationship or have. Who knows what happened there behind the scenes if they tried with the Norfolk Tides. The Norfolk Tides has got an amazing, amazing facility. I can't imagine not hosting a regional there, and they had the week where they're not playing there. So that's just a huge surprise. But if you have an opportunity and you have a big season like Old Dominion's had, I just can't understand why they wouldn't host a regional. But
I don't know. Like I said, their AD to me, he does some good things with scheduling for football and then makes some weird decisions, like not figuring out a place for them to put in a bid to host and just decide not to play football last year. I mean, he's all over the place.
No doubt about it. Trent, obviously, I want to make sure people know about your facility. Fantastic. My son's had an amazing season, and it's going to be difficult for me as a head coach because I just found out tonight that I've got to pick all-stars, and my son is one of the best players on the team. So, I want to thank you personally on the air for your support of not only the program, but obviously Alexander had a lot of confidence after he went to your to the clinic you had a couple months ago before preseason. And anybody that has a chance, whether it's going there or if it's any kind of like training with one of the coaches obviously there, then I would tell you call right now 252-756 next level TC.com. Go to the Facebook page, which is awesome. If you hadn't had a chance to like that, you guys are awesome, and I appreciate everything you're doing for the boys and girls there in Pitt County, and obviously all the college and pro players too.
Thank you, Dave. I appreciate it. Yeah, we've got a great staff, and you know, we're fired up about the Pirates this weekend, and we try to encourage all of our young kids to watch the game. You know, watch the high school games, watch the college games, watch it on television. Go to games, go to the Wood Ducks games. So, yeah, we've got some camps coming up this summer. Folks are welcome to go to our website or give us a call and find out more about that and kind of what we have going on. We'd love to have them. And, yeah, I'm glad. All-Stars is fun, so I hope you enjoy that as a dad just as much as a coach. It's a really fun time of year, and I can tell you I have tremendous memories of those summers and the traveling and the hotel and the all that comes with it. So I hope you enjoy that as a father as well. But we'll be encouraging all those kids in our place if they can to get out and watch as much baseball as they can this coming weekend in this regional.
Trent, I'm related to question real fast. You're around a lot of kids. Something I've noticed over the last year, sports card collecting has been at its highest since the late 80s to mid 90s. It seems to be a lot of adults that are into it because of a lot of valuable chase cards, et cetera. Do you see kids collecting like they did when we were young, or is it all adults?
No, that's, you know, Kyle, that's a great question. I don't. I mean, I've got still a collection from the 80s that I was more into the NFL cards, and I've still got so many of them. I'm a huge Dallas Cowboy fan, so I had – see that helmet in the background there. But I had, every player that ever played for Dallas, and I don't see that. I see adults, and even with some of the guys from East Carolina, the Evan Bolivas and Jake Washers and Bryant Packers and Alec Burleson and – you know, Turner Browns, that as they get a card, a lot of adults that want those cards. But no, I don't see kids collecting cards and particularly chewing the bubble gum out of them like they used to at all. My favorite gum on the that was my favorite gum on the planet. I don't know about you guys.
Oh, really? It seemed like every piece of gum, it was like so hard about break it would break my teeth off. But
But man, I loved it.
Oh, little Topps wax packs, and you crack it open, and there'd be that stick of generic flavored gum. Yes, yeah, good memories.
Yeah.
And if you can find that gum, it'll kind of turn to dust. If you find some old wax packs from the late 80s, sometimes that gum will be in there to be almost like pure dust now. But I don't know. It's an interesting topic. I thought sports cards collecting is at an all time high since that era. And it's interesting that none of it is involving kids. It's all adults. So
big kids, Kyle.
Hey, it's a lot of money in it right now, man. I'm telling you.
I think that's what changed the call. I think once it became, when I collected them, I never thought about money. I think once it became an industry and it started to be about making money, I think that's when it probably changed.
Yeah, no doubt. And I was telling Kyle, by the way, Trent, I don't know if you saw the great one. The Wayne Gretzky's card went for over $3 million recently last week. 3.45 million or something. I was like, "Are you a hockey card?
Crazy. For that? Yeah, they grade them, Dave. And if you got like it may be the only. I forgot what the grading system's called, but it may be the only 10 of that particular Wayne Gretzky rookie card out there, and that's why. The sad part of it is, and we'll get off the subject and wrap this up. Yep. Back when Bubba and I were collecting, Bubba and I were the same age, roughly. That junk wax is what they call it. The early 90s, 89 to about 93, sports card collecting was so popular, they overproduced cards. And it's called junk wax. Your King Griffey Jr.'s, your Frank Thomas's, all those cards from that era are worthless.
There you go. Well, at least you can have that. Well, I tell you what's not worthless is we're going to seg into our PGX Gloves players of the game, player of the week, I should say, and pitcher of the week. And Bubba, I'll shift it to you now.
Yeah, we'll start off with the PGX player of the week. What a tournament Connor Norby had.
Wow.
Connor went 8 out of 17, also had 5 walks, so reached base in 13 out of his 22 plate appearances, had those 3 home runs, one against Memphis to start the tournament, and then he also led off the Cincinnati game prior to hitting one later in that game, a 3-run shot, and had 9 runs driven in. So Connor Norby, our PGX player of the week. And then our PGX pitcher of the week, Gavin Williams. Gavin improved to 10-0. He's won all 10 of his starts, a 1.32 ERA right now. And Gavin went the distance in the run ruling of Memphis in those 7 innings, obviously. Didn't allow a run, 4 hits, 10 strikeouts, 2 walks on 94 pitches.
Great stuff there. And, of course, Trent, your thoughts there on our selections? I guess those are hard to argue with the pitcher of the week being Gavin, and of course, player of the week being Connor Norby. I mean, a guy that's the Golden Spikes certainly candidate, and maybe the best player. I think he's the best player. I know I'm a homer, but he's one of the best, definitely, in college baseball.
Yeah, well, I mean, you can't argue with those. You could probably pencil them in every week with the season they've had. Both of them just been spectacular all year long. So I just hope they can keep it up. I just have so much admiration for the excellency that they've had the entire season this year. I just hope they can continue to do it for the next couple of weeks.
No doubt. And before we go, Bub, I know we had the. Did you want to do the automatic qualifiers for the selection? Obviously, there are.
Yeah, I mean, taking a look at the automatic qualifiers, you know, out of the American, you had USF and the ACC, Duke, the America East. You had NJIT, New Jersey Institute of Technology, ASUN, Jacksonville. The Atlantic 10 was won by VCU. The Big 12 was either going to be Oklahoma State or TCU. Trent, did you see who ended up winning that game? Is it over yet? I know it was TCU
still going on, I believe, 2-0
early on. I believe that one still is in progress. You had Xavier attempting to beat UConn twice. They had won game one, and they were up 1-0 in the second game. The Big South was won by Presbyterian. Northeastern won the CAA. Old Dominion, as we've already touched on, won the Conference USA title, taking down La Tech on its home field. Wright State, 35-11, and this is one that caught my eye because what Wright State's done in the past. They started off the season 0-5 with games at Vanderbilt and then also at Alabama. 3 of those losses by 1 run, and now they have a 35-11 record. Keep an eye on the Wright State Raiders. And then you also had bear with me as a you had Ryder winning the Metro Atlantic Athletic Conference, Norfolk State winning the MEAC, Dallas Baptist won the Missouri Valley. You had either Bryant or Central Connecticut State winning the Northeast Conference, Southeast Missouri representing the Ohio Valley. Army, like Trent mentioned earlier, won the Patriot League. Arkansas, obviously, I'm going to be the top overall seed. By everything we see, 46-10 are the Razorbacks. Sanford won the SoCon. McNeese State will be representing the Southland. North Dakota State won the Summit League. South Alabama won the Sun Belt. And then you had Southern representing the SWAC and Gonzaga with the West Coast Conference.
Bubba, who was it who had never heard of McNeese State that didn't know they existed? Okay, Bubba, evidently.
No, sorry, I went to the wrong tab. As far as McNeese State, I'm trying to remember. I believe it was one of the local radio personalities in Greenville.
Okay, I remember it being somebody, and I just thought it
was Central. Central Connecticut won the Northeast.
Okay, thank you. And then also, I wanted to mention.
Yeah, they won that.
I'm calling it. Central Connecticut State's our 4th seed. I'm calling it now.
Trent saying that about Central Connecticut State.
TCU is.
Go ahead, Trent. I'm sorry.
I was going to say TCU is leading Oklahoma State 10-6 right now in the bottom of the seventh. So TCU is just continuing to do what they've done all year.
Also, congratulations, even though they unfortunately didn't make the tournament, to North Carolina Central. And they're, as most folks who followed college baseball closely probably realize, they're dropping their program, and they lost in that championship game a one run to State. So congratulations to Jim Kerner and the Eagles on an excellent season.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Bubba. They, what a tremendous coach, and hopefully they can get their act together and bring that program back. I've heard some people that were not happy about it, especially in Durham. So they play, you know, Trent, as you know, a baseball guy, and then we'll get out of here. They play at the Durham Athletic Park. I mean, it's owned by the Durham Bulls. But Central's got a great coach, great place to play baseball. It's very sad. I know that's the reality of, unfortunately, D1 sports right now. But hopefully they can get their act together and bring that back. And I hate it for the guys that the players and the coaches, for sure.
No, absolutely. Well said.
All right, Bubba, I know you have a graphic for the regional. Let's put that up. Congratulations to East Carolina hosting for their third straight year as a school record, and six-time hosting, of course, in 01, 04, 09, 18, 19, and 21. Four-time hosting at Clark LeClaire. And, of course, we did it in 01 in Wilson and 04 in Kinston. So just think about where we've come from. Very proud of East Carolina, Cliff Godwin and company, for a great accomplishment. By the way, again, Wednesday at 9 a.m. If you want tickets, you better go ahead and get those tickets Wednesday at 9 a.m. ECUpirates.com, 1-800-ECU. Trent, thank you as always, my friend. Again, how can people reach you? And if they have any, obviously they want any kind of training for baseball or softball, or certainly the clinics you have coming up.
No, thanks for having me on, guys. Yeah, just Google us at Next Level Training Center. Is the easiest way. We've got a Facebook page, a website. We try to keep up to date. Welcome to stop by. We're open. I'll be in tomorrow, 6 a.m. to 9 p.m. So we're open on Memorial Day as well. We'll have people when they're using the place. So I just appreciate all y'all's support, and looking forward to watching more college baseball this weekend.
All right. Again, tomorrow at noon, we'll find out where the Pirates, well, we know they're playing in Greenville, but who they're playing. The selection show, I believe you said, was on ESPNU, right, Trent?
Yeah, I think it's ESPNU. I know it's at noon. Sometimes they switch, yeah, whether it's U2 or the regular.
All right.
Yeah, Dave, according to what I saw earlier on the NCAA website, unless it had changed, like Trent mentioned, because it often does, it's at noon on ESPN2.
Okay, on 2. All right, so there you
on
go.
Two, not you. Okay.
All right, so 2, okay. Not you. You Trent, too. Thanks again, buddy. Appreciate you so much, and hope you have a great night, and we'll talk to you again soon. Appreciate you. All right,
Thank you, guys.
No doubt about it. Hey, guys, do you have anything before we go?
Yeah, as you're watching your selection show tomorrow, you're grilling out, maybe you're enjoying the day at the beach. Don't forget, tomorrow is not about it being a day off of work and holiday. A lot of people have made sacrifices in the Marines, the Army, the Air Force, Coast Guard, et cetera, fighting for our country. That's what Memorial Day is about. So think about that tomorrow as you're enjoying your day.
How about you, Bubba?
Absolutely. I echo what Kyle just said, and also make sure Pirate Nation, if you are able to get tickets, or you're interested in tickets, at least make an attempt to place that order. 5 o'clock Tuesday is the deadline, with the holiday tomorrow. So June 1st at 5 p.m. to get those regional ticket orders in. And then hopefully the Pirates will, you know, you may check when you call. In the past, I believe you can go ahead and maybe put your name in the hat in case the Pirates did host a super regional. But the deadline for that, should the Pirates advance to a super regional and they were able to host, would be June 8th at 5 p.m. So keep that in mind as well.
And while you're doing that, go ahead and get your season football tickets.
No doubt about it. ECUpirates.com or 1-800-DIAL-ECU or those numbers. All right, guys. Thanks to Trent Brent, the owner of Next Level Training Center. Appreciate him. Thanks to Mark Minakazi for his support of the program with the PGX Player of the Week and Pitcher of the Week. Thank you, Kaz, very much. Thanks to all viewing and listening. Until next time, you've been watching Extra Innings and listening to it right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody, and go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media at the Sports OBJ on Twitter, at the Sports Objective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!